Once again, European chemicals are at a crossroads. The European Union's new green push could mean European chemicals revolutionize production methods and come up with systems free of greenhouse gas emissions, which are ultimately causing global warming. But the burden associated to the required heavy investments in research for new technologies could also cause the opposite effect, more delocalization with companies moving operations to regions where costs are lower and the regulatory burdens less stringent. The chemicals industry still employs more than 1 million people in the European Union and is a key industry supplying many other manufacturing sectors. This links to what sort of industry the EU wants to build in future decades. The Green Deal approved 1 year ago and the Recovery Fund approved in July 2020 aim to make the European Union a carbon emissions-free territory by 2050. Changing an economic system based mostly on fossil fuels into a carbon-free economy is a fascinating target, but a very major challenge as well. In this outlook, we want to focus on how electrification of transport could affect the chemicals industry. We'll explore what the loss of the UK means for the EU's single market and how feasible it is for the chemicals industry to become carbon neutral. With me today, some members of the European ICIS News Desk: Nigel Davis, editor of the Inside section, Tom Brown, deputy news editor, and Morgan Condon, news reporter. And I am Jonathan Lopez, news editor for Europe. Morgan, I'd like to start with you, actually. The automotive industry is key for the petrochemicals industry. They sell around 20% of their output to that industry. And given that traditional combustion engine vehicles have an estimated 30,000 parts, I think, which many of them are made with petrochemicals, but that is set to change with the arrival of electric vehicles. Could you tell us what that would imply in terms of consumption of petrochemicals?
Hi, Jonathan. Thank you for hosting this podcast. Yeah, it's a really interesting subject. As like you said, the automotive industry is a huge downstream market for petrochemicals in general. 13% of all European low-density polyethylene consumption is going into fuel tanks so it's quite significant. But obviously, like you said, the electric vehicles are sort of coming to the fore. Our own analyst, Rhiannon O'Connor, estimates that they're not likely to come to full significance until 2035, 2040 in China. But the impact of increasing demand for hybrid vehicles is much more likely. So one of the most prominent features for electrification of vehicles is having a lower weight, as this increases the amount that the vehicles can move, as if they're lighter, they need less charges. And it's also a safety thing as well, as an environmental impact.
Mm-hmm. So what about the batteries? I mean, everything seems to be about batteries these days. The batteries were very expensive 10 years ago, but they've come down in price. The European automobile industry was losing the race against China and the US. What is Europe doing in batteries?
BASF are keeping hold of their two sites that sort of look at batteries. So they're two investments in Europe which BASF are keeping hold of in terms of electric vehicles.
Yeah, the CEO has said that is a key market for petrochemicals to grow in the coming decade.
Absolutely. There was some research last year, I think in June, from Frost and Sullivan, who indicated that demand for electric vehicles was actually more resilient compared to conventional vehicles, with waiting lists still sort of prevalent despite the pandemic and the sort of ongoing economic crisis. And their consultant, Kevin Kelly, said that we won't see a reduction in investment in this space. One sort of potential issue is that we need to increase consumption of electric vehicles in order to meet our sort of green expectations and targets that the EU has set for themselves. The ACEA have said that at the moment, of 243 million vehicles, passenger vehicles that are active, only 615,000 of them are zero emission, which is 0.25% of the entire fleet. And we would need to increase that 50-fold in the next 10 years in order to meet standards and targets.
ACEA, which is the trade group for the European car makers. A trade group that has also said that the EU has not sufficient charging points. And I think that is, they are asking public authorities to speed up that. Otherwise, the rollout of electric cars won't
exactly be possible. Exactly. Yeah, infrastructure needs to be there to meet this sort of surplus of demand. Otherwise, you know, meeting these targets and increasing sort of greener vehicles is not going to happen.
Thank you very much. Tom, you just took part in a brilliant webinar on Brexit, and you've been covering the topic for more than 4 years since the UK voters decided to leave the EU. So on the 24th of December, right on Christmas Eve, we had this trade deal agreed that gave some clarity to the industry, but it gave some clarity in some parts, but left so many questions unanswered. Can you give us a summary of how big the UK chemicals industry was within the EU and what's in store for the industry?
Well, thank you, Jonathan. Interesting times. Brexit finally happening in the midst of a pandemic, and potentially the worst part of the whole pandemic, at least in the UK. So it's all very exciting. And of course, as you say, UK and Europe are very enmeshed in terms of the chemical supply chains. Things go back and forth across the channel multiple times in the process of making an item or being converted. And the UK has had a trade deficit in chemicals with the EU for most of the last few years. And in fact, we estimate that 16,000 chemicals that the UK uses but does not produce in the country. So these are very enmeshed supply chains, which are less under threat than they may have been under no deal, but the ramifications are still very big, and it will be interesting to see over the next few years how well the supply chains hold together, or if the UK gradually moves away from the EU and vice versa.
So what's happening with the regulation? I mean, we know the EU has the system called REIT, which is one of the most stringent regulations in the world for chemicals. The industry always complains that it involves a lot of cost. But the truth is, the UK was fully integrated in that system, and now they are out, or aren't they?
Absolutely, and this is a big issue because chemicals spent a lot of time and money on the REACH system and lobbied very hard to try and maintain that afterwards. Like Theresa May made speeches about mentioned being remain part of the European Chemicals Agency. But the desire to break away from the European Court of Justice kind of put paid to that finally. And so the UK is making like a miniature of the EU system in the UK, which will involve, even under best case scenario, it will involve a huge amount of replicated work and time and money. Initially, it looked like companies were going to have 2 years to replicate the whole over a decade long process of registering for EU REACH, but this has been moved into a series of phased tonnage bans like in EU REACH, and so there's a little more time. I think the smallest tonnages will be due to be registered by the end of 2027, or late 2027 rather, but in the meantime, it's still a lot more work and a lot of duplicated work, which doesn't really offer anything new in terms of benefits and for health or environment. So it's really just a lot of bureaucracy with very little purpose beyond just being able to maintain regulatory continuity with the European Union.
What is among the industry players in the UK? I mean, clearly the UK is not in the times of Imperial Chemicals Industries, ICI, anymore. Mm-hmm. The chemicals industry became quite small, but quite significant in the north of England. What are players thinking? Are they hopeful? Are they fearful?
I think that obviously there's relief right now because we were really going down the wire at this point. I mean, look, the deal was agreed on the 24th on Christmas Eve, and it was ratified even later in the year. So there was just a couple of days between ratification and it coming into effect. So it's, you know, beyond the last minute, really. And so obviously there's relief that planes can land, that tariffs aren't going to come into effect, and that those kind of huge, like almost apocalyptic disruptions from no deal Brexit don't seem to be on the cards anymore. But at the same time, you know, people kind of gradually wake up to how much more documentation, how much more effort has been baked into their lives now, and how much they're going to have to come to terms with this. And for large multinationals with presences in Europe and in countries across the world with dedicated legal compliance teams, etc., This isn't as onerous, but for small players with a UK-only presence, they're really having to ask themselves some tough questions about whether they continue to sell to Europe or if they set up a subsidiary within Europe to sell on the continent, etc. And just it's much more tough for small players than for large players. And of course, on the other hand, policymakers are much more aware now of the importance of the chemical sector to the UK economy. But the fact is that a lot of these companies, which are very important, especially in the north, as you said, are very small and are going to have to deal with a lot more administrative work than they would have ever had in the last 4 or 5 decades. So it's still a lot to deal with.
The UK has left the EU, but I don't think it will stop hearing about the EU.
Absolutely not.
Finally, Nigel Davis, the EU green targets, they are very ambitious. And until Joe Biden won the election in November, promising to get back the US into the Paris Climate Agreement to slow global warming, the EU seemed to be a long walk. Over the years you've been covering the industry, you've seen chemicals in Europe losing ground to other jurisdictions, and China and the US mostly. Do you think the new green push will be another cause for more companies going away from Europe, or do you think they will embrace this heavy investment future that awaits them?
Well, I suppose, Jonathan, you've got to think of it as an opportunity as much as a threat. I mean, a 55% reduction in greenhouse or carbon emission targets by 2030 is a huge target to meet. And industry executives have said that supply chains and regulation needs to be almost reset. You know, value chains need to be reset. What does that mean? I suppose it means that the EU needs an industrial strategy. It hasn't really got one at the moment. The EU needs to understand what manufacturing, how important manufacturing is to its economy or the EU economy. I'm not convinced that certain members of parliament and elsewhere actually believe that or understand that. And also, where does the EU want to go? I mean, the EU wants to be producing materials in a greener fashion. So that means using less carbon-based energy. And there's a big push by the industry, for instance, to try and decarbonize as much as possible steam crackers, for instance. So we talk about electric arc furnaces and other technologies which would enable companies to reduce the amount of electricity produced from non-renewables, from carbon-based sources, to power their steam crackers and other reactions that need energy. But of course, you can't get away from the fact that this is an industry based on carbon, and it's going to need a lot of carbon to actually produce the products that we all use every day. So therefore, you know, recycling comes into this in such a huge way as well. The EU localities, as well as national governments, need to sort of step up and establish recycling systems. And the chemical industry and other players need to really step up to the mark and get involved in recycling in a much bigger way than they are at the moment. Huge challenge. Whether we're going to continue to produce base petrochemicals in Europe in the way that we do now, possibly not, or from different feedstock sources, certainly. The cost advantage feedstocks, if you follow the traditional way of thinking, are still gas-based. So they're based in the Middle East, they're based in North America, wherever else you've got shale gas. And the market is in China. So, the industry in Europe needs to watch out.
A very fascinating aspect of all this is obviously Europe has been hardly hit by the pandemic. Countries like Spain, Italy, really badly hit. So the EU comes with this recovery fund, 750 billion euros agreed in the summer to fund green and digital projects. This has all been championed by Ursula von der Leyen, the new president of the European Commission, the EU's executive arm, which has been on the post for a year. She's from Angela Merkel's party, conservative in Germany. The German establishment has always very strongly advocated for their industry, and they've done quite well. They've kept the manufacturing base very high at around 20% of GDP, which is considered this healthy level that an economy should be in. Whereas France, Spain, or the UK, manufacturing accounts for 10% of GDP, and their economies are heavily relying on services. Is this a new jump by the German establishment? Because we know the German chemicals industry and other industries, they are very skeptical this can be achieved. Obviously, it will involve cost for them. What is the EU doing?
Well, Jonathan, I mean, the EU is a lot of companies actually agree with what the EU is doing. I mean, we're all in this together, so we can see what the impact of climate change is at the moment, and we're very concerned about what it might be in future. So, you know, we can work towards these goals. And like I said before, you know, you have to look on it as an opportunity as opposed to a threat. Manufacturing can change. Why can't we manufacture more batteries and more electric vehicles in the EU if we clearly need those, that type of transport? You know, why can't we use more renewable energy? We're already doing that. We've got a very active renewable energy sector, whether it's wind power or solar to a lesser extent. But, you know, there are opportunities there as much as there are threats. And so I think the manufacturing footprint will change over time. But that's a good thing. And I think in a world which is, you know, you look at what's happening with the or potentially could happen with the Biden administration in the US. You look at what the Chinese are thinking in terms of their carbon targets for 2060. You know, the rest of the world is following. And there will be competition there. So if we've got a greener, cleaner manufacturing base in Europe, then we'll be in a much better position.
And I think Nigel makes a really good point about the Biden administration as well and the implications there. I mean, just this week we saw we saw Georgia flip the Senate, which means that the Democrats control the House and the Senate, which means that things like the Green Deal are much more achievable suddenly. And that kind of presents a picture of a much more kind of harmonized global approach to this, rather than Europe kind of striking out and trying to, you know, change the structure of the economy very dramatically in a relatively short space of time. And of course, China and other countries in Asia are increasingly ambitious too. When I spoke to BSF CEO Martin Brudermüller, he warned about that there's an opportunity here to, you know, really cement Europe's expertise in research and development, but that China could easily overtake us if we don't, if Europe isn't careful, kind of thing. So, you know, there's a lot of work happening across the world, and with US coming back into the fold, it means that, you know, that there's less risk of kind of competitive impacts in one jurisdiction rather in another.
Even with sort of Brexit ongoing, listening to the webinar that Tom so wonderfully participated in previously, you know, you've got the Chemical Industry Association CEO Steve Elliott saying that the things on the UK agenda are things like hydrogen, decarbonisation, wind farms, battery plants. So even though the UK and the EU are sort of diverging, they're still working towards the same goals. We just need that kind of concrete plans in place to get us towards that kind of greener future, which chemistry is ultimately going to be a big part of.
That's a really good point. And sorry, just to finish off, one thing I think which isn't, I think this is interesting, it hasn't been discussed very much in general, is that some research by Boston Research Group about the fact that return on capital employed, like investment by companies, is offering a lower return than it was, kind of thing, like, and which means that companies need to look harder at kind of acquisitions they make or new projects they embark on. But this is coming at a point where companies need to invest a lot of money in research and scaling up things like the circular economy, which is important and, you know, kind of pushes off the prospect of harsher regulation of the sector, but it's not likely to actually increase profit margins, kind of thing. So it's an interesting balance right now where companies are trying to cut their budgets because of the coronavirus pandemic and be much smarter with their projects, but also need to invest lots of money in something which is socially useful, but not necessarily going to make the shareholders any richer. And that's going to be an interesting balance over the next few years, I think.
Fascinating. Thank you all very much. 2021 has started with another development in the coronavirus pandemic that threatens to once again worsen the health crisis in Europe. In fact, the four of us are talking to you from London, where we are again locked up in our houses as the new strain is spreading fast and is threatening to overwhelm the health services. However, this time is not April last year, and we have the hope that the vaccines about to be rolled out will prove effective, easing the way to economic recovery. When that happens and the health emergency recedes, the chemicals industry is set to turn its attention to those issues that marked the agenda before the pandemic: recycling, sustainability, and how to get the circularity that would help achieve carbon neutrality by 2050, which is the true challenge of our times. This endeavor is only possible with major investments and research from both the public and private sectors, corresponds to the major threat that a never warming Earth represents for all of us. Over the course of this decade, at ICES, we'll aim to continue bringing light to developments in the fascinating chemicals industry and how it can adapt to these challenges. Thank you for listening and happy new decade.